Hello, and welcome back to the Great Writers Steel online podcasty type initiative. Today, we are going to cover great opening passages. What makes an opening passage great? How you grab the reader? How you keep their attention? And how you do so while remaining true to your story? I'm going to go through some examples from Best American Short Stories 2012. It's a book that you should have on your shelves. If not, I don't know why. They're the best. So, kick back, pour yourself a color teeny, and prepare for some knowledge. Here we go. Your opening passage should do a number of things. First of all, you need to establish your characters. Even if there's only one. Who's going to be in this story? Maybe a little bit of what they want. The stakes that they're going to have to deal with in the story. Next, you have to establish tone. Is this going to be a happy story, suspense, thriller, science fiction, romance? Give us a little bit about what this story is going to be like. The journey that you're going to take us on in the course of the narrative. Then you also have to establish the kind of diction that you're going to use, which ties into tone. If it's a first-person story from a well-educated person, you might have a higher diction with bigger words, more complicated sentences. But if it's a first-person story from someone who may not be as educated, you're not going to break out those SAT words that we all know and love. Finally, that opening passage needs to kick off your narrative. It doesn't necessarily have to have the inciting incident. If you don't know what that is, an inciting incident is the bit of narrative that really kicks off the story, right? If you're a Harry Potter fan, then you know that the inciting incident of the whole Harry Potter saga, at least the books, is when Hagrid comes to tell Harry who he is and where he's going to go on the hero's journey. Most of all, the opening passage of your story should give the reader the feeling that you are there with them. You're pulling up a chair, maybe you're spinning it around so you can sit down backwards in the chair, and you're telling them, look, I got a great story I'm going to tell you. There's a lot of cool characters, a lot of cool things happen, you're not going to believe this story. Your opening passage needs to get that across. So let's look at some examples. Go ahead and take out your book, 2012 Best American Short Stories. Have you got them? All right, I'll give you a second. Bum, bum, bada, bum, 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 bum. Okay, got it? All right. Open up your hymnal slash short story book to 196, Eric Puckner's Beautiful Monsters. The opening passage? The boy is making breakfast for his sister. Fried eggs and cheap frozen sausages furred with ice. When he sees a man eating an apple from the tree outside the window, the boy drops his spatula. It is a gusty morning, sun sharp and beautiful, and the man's shirt flags out to one side of him, rippling in the wind. The boy has never seen a grown man in real life, only in books, and the sight is both more and less frightening than he expected. Okay, so, how does Mr. Puckner establish character? Boom! Right there. The boy. First two words of the story. Notice that he doesn't give the boy a name. And throughout the story, the boy doesn't get a name. He's just the boy. That kind of generic nature puts you at kind of a distance from the character. But because it's a boy, we know he's young, we have some kind of empathy for him. Then we see a man. Just a man. No name. Again, generic. These are the characters. What are they doing? The boy is making breakfast for his sister. The man is trying to get a meal for himself. And this is an odd kind of story, right? The story's great. Perfect for Father's Day, which happens to be tomorrow as I record this. It's an odd kind of tone, isn't it? The boy is making breakfast, right? The man, even though it's a sun-sharp, beautiful morning, the boy's never seen a man. And he's taking an apple from the tree. This is a weird kind of open. We know immediately that this is not a, in quotes, normal story. We get that. Diction. I love that little that short little sentence in the beginning. The boy drops his spatula. Descriptive sentence. Boom. We know it's a shock. We learn later in the story that it's not just the shock to see anyone in the backyard. It's a shock to see a man at all. It's also a very matter-of-fact kind of diction in the opening of the story. There are a couple adjectives in there, but just very descriptive. Mr. Puckner knows that he needs to establish the world in a clear way because the world is slightly different from our own. Does this opening passage kick off the narrative? Absolutely. The inciting incident is when the boy sees the man. The first time he's seen a man. A grown one in real life, as Mr. Puckner says. So, from here, the whole story takes off as a result of the boy seeing the man. Mr. Puckner fulfills all of the obligations of the opening passage. Next, we turn to page 75. Roxane Gay's North Country, a story originally published in the wonderful journal Hobart. The opening passage. I have moved to the edge of the world for 2 years. If I am not careful, I will fall. After my first apartment meeting, my new colleagues encouraged me to join them on a scenic cruise to meet more locals. The Peninsula Star will travel through the Portage Canal, up to Copper Harbor, and then on out onto Lake Superior. I am handed a glossy brochure with bright pictures of blue skies and calm lake waters. You'll be able to enjoy the foliage, they tell me, shining with enthusiasm for the Upper Peninsula. Do you know how to swim? They ask. All right. Number one, does this establish character? Yes, it is in the first person. The very first word of the story is I. So Ms. Gay makes it very clear that we're in a first-person story. What else do we learn about the character? This character is beginning a 2-year adventure in a department at a college. We know that the character is also an academic. We learn that the character's a little bit lonely. It seems as though she needs to be convinced to meet these colleagues. It seems as though she's a little bit dubious about her new home. And that ties into the tone. It's kind of ominous, right? If I am not careful, I will fall. We care about the character immediately, and we know that this is kind of a, not a coming-of-age story, but a story about a woman who has an experience that kind of changes her in some way. And we look at the diction. This one's also very straightforward, but also beautiful. Ms. Gay is very clear by telling us the character, I have moved to the edge of the world for 2 years. She's giving us that exposition, making it clear, but also we get some of the beautiful phrases in there. We love the name of the boat, the Peninsula Star. We love the glossy brochure with bright pictures of blue skies. This is a character who is well-spoken and intelligent, and she's going to give us an interesting story. Does this kick off the narrative? Absolutely. We know that the character is at the beginning of a journey, and that she's lonely, and we're kind of guessing that the story is going to address that loneliness. So, Ms. Gay again passes with flying colors. We turn to page 108. Stephen Milhauser's Miracle Polish, a story that was in The New Yorker. This is also a very cool story. It reminded me of an episode, maybe Alfred Hitchcock Presents, maybe A Twilight Zone. A very suspenseful, taut, meaningful story that I liked a lot. Let's check out the opening passage. I should have said no to the stranger at the door, with his skinny throat and his black sample case that pulled him a little to the side, so that one of his jacket cuffs was higher than the other. A polite no would have done the trick. No thanks, I'm afraid not today. Then the closing of the door and the heavy click of the latch. But I'd seen the lines of dirt and the black shoe creases, the worn-down heels, the shine on the jacket sleeves, the glint of desperation in his eyes. All the more reason, I said to myself, to send him on his way, as I stepped aside and watched him move into my living room. Do we love that opening sentence?
Yes, we do.
It's a little bit not long in a bad way. It's beautiful and descriptive and puts everything all into one masterfully written sentence. We learn immediately. Do we establish character? Yes. It is a first-person story. The character's kind of cool, too, because the character's letting us know that this was a meaningful event. I should have said no to the stranger at the door, asking that question, why? Why should he have said no? And it's an answer that will be distributed throughout the rest of the story. Is the tone established? Oh, yes, it is mysterious, right? Why is letting the stranger in something that the narrator regrets? Does it establish diction? Yes, the rest of the story is going to be beautiful, it's going to be meaningful, and that requires Mr. Milhauser to use a great deal of beautiful and powerful language. So that all makes sense. And does it kick off the narrative? Absolutely. That's your inciting incident. The whole story starts as the character, the peddler character, arrives at the door. After that, everything has changed for the narrator. Has Mr. Milhauser given us reason to read on? Absolutely. Next up, page 97. Mike McGuinness's Navigators, another story that was published in Hobart. One that also kind of meant something to me because it reminds me a little bit of my own relationship with my father. And I also point out, according to Mr. McGuinness's Twitter feed, today is his birthday as I record this on June 14th. So happy birthday, Mr. McGuinness. Here's the opening passage. After they found the metal boots, but before the dirt clod, Joshua's father bought graph paper at Walmart. Unfurled and pinned on the wall where his mother's family pictures had once hung, it stood 6 feet high by 7 feet wide. The paper was hung in three rows, each printed with thousands of small gray squares. If Joshua crossed his eyes, the squares seemed to rise from the page. He crossed his eyes and then uncrossed them, watching the squares rise and fall. It's time we started a map, his father had said, or we'll never finish this game. I love the way that Mr. McGuinness establishes the characters in Navigators. We know that it's a third-person story immediately after they. We learn the character's name, the younger character's name, Joshua. We learn that Joshua is younger. He's not an adult. His father, it's not an adult father and an adult child. So we're in the mindset of the child already. We also know that the father is participating in something that the child cares about. So it's kind of a happy tone, but it's also really sad. His mother's family pictures had once hung. That detail gives us a really powerful punch to let us know that something is a little bit wrong in this family. That helps us establish tone as well, so something may be going on with the mother. But also, it's a happy tone because he's collaborating with his son to try to win a game that I wish I had played, Legend of Silence. Does the diction of the first passage match that of the story? Absolutely, you have a little bit of poeticism, but you also have a very clear description, which characterizes the story. And does this kick off the narrative? Yep. How can you tell? Because the rest of the story is about the father and the son and their relationship to the game. So we have the game in that very first paragraph. Last but not least, turn to page 281 for Cade Walbert's M&M World, another story from that venerable place of fiction, The New Yorker. The opening passage? Ginny had promised to take the girls to M&M World, that ridiculous place in Times Square they had passed too often in a taxi, Maggie scooting to press her face to the glass to watch the giant smiling M&M scale the Empire State Building on the electronic billboard and wave from the spire, its color dissolving yellow, then blue, then red, then yellow again. She had promised. Promised, Olivia said, her face twisted into the expression she reserved for moments of betrayal. Please, Olivia whined. You said spring. Miss Walbert introduces the characters immediately in that first passage. Ginny, the mother. Maggie and Olivia, the children. Now, I don't have any children of my own, which is a very good thing for humanity as a whole. But I do know a little bit, and I'm a human, so I understand that it must be a huge pain, but also very gratifying to bring children to a place like M&M World or a ball game, because you want to give them new experiences, but it's also very stressful because they like to run away and hide. So, we learn immediately that there's some kind of tension, right? That comes out in the tone. We get the character and then the tone. Jenny, the mother, has promised something to the children, and so now she's going to give it to them. The kids are going to be happy, but of course, there's always some kind of difficulty in there. Do we establish diction right away? Yes, the sentences are very professional and clear and descriptive. The third-person narrator takes some kind of distance from the characters, and we know there are going to be some beautiful sentences in the story, but there are also going to be some powerful thoughts in the story because the narrator already has access to the characters. Does the story kick off the narrative? Yep, because going to M&M World is the whole point of the story, where the climax happens, and where all of the standard epiphanies take place. As my final example, I'm not going to stick with Best American Short Stories 2012. I'm going to talk about one of my favorite short stories, if not my favorite. If you read my essay about T.C. Boyle, you'll know that I have a very interesting relationship with the story The Love of My Life. Originally published in 2000 in The New Yorker, that story knocked me out. I was at a three-way rest stop near Buffalo, either on my way back to Ohio or coming from Ohio, I don't recall. But what I do recall is reading that story and having my heart wrenched, but also my faith in humanity restored in a very strange way, in a way that only a writer like T.C. Boyle can do. It gets you from the opening. They wore each other like a pair of socks. He was at her house, she was at his. Everywhere they went, to the mall, to the game, to movies and shops and the classes that structured their days like a new kind of chronology, their fingers were entwined, their shoulders touching, their hips joined in the slow, triumphant sachet of love. My goodness, isn't that beautiful? Oh, the characters are established, right? They, these two people. He doesn't even differentiate between them because they're supposed to be so together, which is also a reflection of the sadness of the end of the story. It establishes the tone. Oh, this is a beautiful, idealistic tone. Hello, and welcome back to the Great Writers Steel Online Podcasty Type Initiative. Today, we are going to cover great opening passages. What makes an opening passage great? How you grab the reader? How you keep their attention? And how you do so while remaining true to your story? I'm going to go through some examples from Best American Short Stories 2012. It's a book that you should have on your shelves. If not, I don't know why. They're the best. They're the best. So, kick back. Pour yourself a color teeny and prepare for some knowledge. Here we go. Your opening passage should do a number of things. First of all, you need to establish your characters, even if there's only one. Who's going to be in this story? Maybe a little bit of what they want. The stakes that they're going to have to deal with in the story. Next, you have to establish tone. Is this going to be a happy story, suspense, thriller, science fiction, romance? Give us a little bit about what this story is going to be like, the journey that you're going to take us on in the course of the narrative. Then you also have to establish the kind of diction that you're going to use, which ties into tone. If it's a first-person story from a well-educated person, you might have a higher diction with bigger words, more complicated sentences. But if it's a first-person story from someone who may not be as educated, you're not going to break out those SAT words that we all know and love. Finally, that opening passage needs to kick off your narrative. It doesn't necessarily have to have the inciting incident. If you don't know what that is, an inciting incident is the bit of narrative that really kicks off the story, right? If you're a Harry Potter fan, then you know that the inciting incident of the whole Harry Potter saga, at least the books, is when Hagrid comes to tell Harry who he is and where he's going to go on the hero's journey. Most of all, the opening passage of your story should give the reader the feeling that you are there with them. You're pulling up a chair, maybe you're spinning it around so you can sit down backwards in the chair, and you're telling them, look, I got a great story I'm going to tell you. There's a lot of cool characters, a lot of cool things happen. You're not going to believe this story. Your opening passage needs to get that across. So let's look at some examples. Go ahead and take out your book, 2012 Best American Short Stories. Have you got them? All right, I'll give you a second. Bum, bum, bada, bum, 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 bum. Okay, got it? All right. Open up your hymnal slash short story book to 196, Eric Puchner's Beautiful Monsters. The opening passage? The boy is making breakfast for his sister. Fried eggs and cheap frozen sausages furred with ice when he sees a man eating an apple from the tree outside the window. The boy drops his spatula. It is a gusty morning, sun sharp and beautiful, and the man's shirt flags out to one side of him, rippling in the wind. The boy has never seen a grown man in real life, only in books, and the sight is both more and less frightening than he expected. Okay, so, how does Mr. Puchner establish character? Boom! Right there. The boy. First two words of the story. Notice that he doesn't give the boy a name. And throughout the story, the boy doesn't get a name. He's just the boy. That kind of generic nature puts you at kind of a distance from the character. But because it's a boy, we know he's young, we have some kind of empathy for him. Then we see a man. Just a man. No name. Again, generic. These are the characters. What are they doing? The boy is making breakfast for his sister. The man is trying to get a meal for himself. And this is an odd kind of story, right? The story's great. Perfect for Father's Day, which happens to be tomorrow as I record this. It's an odd kind of tone, isn't it? The boy is making breakfast, right? The man, even though it's a sun-sharp, beautiful morning, the boy's never seen a man. And he's taking an apple from the tree. This is a weird kind of open. We know immediately that this is not a, in quotes, normal story. We get that. Diction. I love that short little sentence in the beginning. The boy drops his spatula. Descriptive sentence. Boom. We know it's a shock. We learn later in the story that it's not just the shock to see anyone in the backyard. It's a shock to see a man at all. It's also a very matter-of-fact kind of diction in the opening of the story. There are a couple adjectives in there, but just very descriptive. Mr. Puchner knows that he needs to establish the world in a clear way because the world is slightly different from our own. Does this opening passage kick off the narrative? Absolutely. The inciting incident is when the boy sees the man. The first time he's seen a man. A grown one in real life, as Mr. Puchner says. So, from here, the whole story takes off as a result of the boy seeing the man. Mr. Puchner fulfills all of the obligations of the opening passage. Next, we turn to page 75. Roxane Gay's North Country, a story originally published in the wonderful journal Hobart. The opening passage? I have moved to the edge of the world for 2 years. If I am not careful, I will fall. After my first apartment meeting, my new colleagues encouraged me to join them on a scenic cruise to meet more locals. The Peninsula Star will travel through the Portage Canal, up to Copper Harbor, and then on out onto Lake Superior. I am handed a glossy brochure with bright pictures of blue skies and calm lake waters. You'll be able to enjoy the foliage, they tell me, shining with enthusiasm for the Upper Peninsula. Do you know how to swim? They ask. All right. Number one, does this establish character? Yes, it is in the first person. The very first word of the story is I. So Ms. Gay makes it very clear that we're in a first-person story. What else do we learn about the character? This character is beginning a 2-year adventure in a department at a college. We know that the character is also an academic. We learn that the character's a little bit lonely. It seems as though she needs to be convinced to meet these colleagues. It seems as though she's a little bit dubious about her new home. And that ties into the tone. It's kind of ominous, right? If I am not careful, I will fall. We care about the character immediately, and we know that this is kind of a, not a coming-of-age story, but a story about a woman who has an experience that kind of changes her in some way. And we look at the diction. This one's also very straightforward, but also beautiful. Ms. Gay is very clear by telling us the character, I have moved to the edge of the world for 2 years. She's giving us that exposition, making it clear, but also we get some of the beautiful phrases in there. We love the name of the boat, the Peninsula Star. We love the glossy brochure with bright pictures of blue skies. This is a character who is well-spoken and intelligent, and she's going to give us an interesting story. Does this kick off the narrative? Absolutely. We know that the character is at the beginning of a journey, and that she's lonely, and we're kind of guessing that the story is going to address that loneliness. So, Ms. Gay, again, passes with flying colors. We turn to page 108. Stephen Milhauser's Miracle Polish, a story that was in The New Yorker. This is also a very cool story. It reminded me of an episode, maybe Alfred Hitchcock Presents, maybe A Twilight Zone. A very suspenseful, taut, meaningful story that I liked a lot. Let's check out the opening passage. I should have said no to the stranger at the door, with his skinny throat and his black sample case that pulled him a little to the side, so that one of his jacket cuffs was higher than the other. A polite no would have done the trick. No thanks, I'm afraid not today. Then the closing of the door and the heavy click of the latch. But I'd seen the lines of dirt and the black shoe creases, the worn-down heels, the shine on the jacket sleeves, the glint of desperation in his eyes. All the more reason, I said to myself, to send him on his way, as I stepped aside and watched him move into my living room. Do we love that opening sentence?
Yes, we do.
It's a little bit not long in a bad way. It's beautiful and descriptive and puts everything all into one masterfully written sentence. We learn immediately. Do we establish character? Yes. It is a first-person story. The character's kind of cool, too, because the character's letting us know that this was a meaningful event. I should have said no to the stranger at the door, asking that question, why? Why should he have said no? And it's an answer that will be distributed throughout the rest of the story. Is the tone established? Oh, yes, it is mysterious, right? Why is letting the stranger in something that the narrator regrets? Does it establish diction? Yes, the rest of the story is going to be beautiful, it's going to be meaningful, and that requires Mr. Milhauser to use a great deal of beautiful and powerful language. So that all makes sense. And does it kick off the narrative? Absolutely. That's your inciting incident. The whole story starts as the character, the peddler character, arrives at the door. After that, everything has changed for the narrator. Has Mr. Milhauser given us reason to read on? Absolutely. Next up, page 97. Mike McGuinness's Navigators, another story that was published in Hobart. One that also kind of meant something to me because it reminds me a little bit of my own relationship with my father. And I also point out, according to Mr. McGuinness's Twitter feed, today is his birthday as I record this on June 14th. So happy birthday, Mr. McGuinness. Here's the opening passage. After they found the metal boots, but before the dirt clod, Joshua's father bought graph paper at Walmart. Unfurled and pinned on the wall where his mother's family pictures had once hung, it stood 6 feet high by 7 feet wide. The paper was hung in three rows, each printed with thousands of small gray squares. If Joshua crossed his eyes, the squares seemed to rise from the page. He crossed his eyes and then uncrossed them, watching the squares rise and fall. It's time we started a map, his father had said, or we'll never finish this game. I love the way that Mr. McGuinness establishes the characters in Navigators. We know that it's a third-person story immediately after they. We learn the character's name, the younger character's name, Joshua. We learn that Joshua is younger. He's not an adult. His father, it's not an adult father and an adult child. So we're in the mindset of the child already. We also know that the father is participating in something that the child cares about. So it's kind of a happy tone, but it's also really sad. His mother's family pictures had once hung. That detail gives us a really powerful punch to let us know that something is a little bit wrong in this family. That helps us establish tone as well. So, something may be going on with the mother. But also, it's a happy tone because he's collaborating with his son to try to win a game that I wish I had played. Legend of Silence. Does the diction of the first passage match that of the story? Absolutely, you have a little bit of poeticism, but you also have a very clear description, which characterizes the story. And does this kick off the narrative? Yep. How can you tell? Because the rest of the story is about the father and the son and their relationship to the game. So we have the game in that very first paragraph. Last but not least, turn to page 281 for Cade Walbert's M&M World, another story from that venerable place of fiction, The New Yorker. The opening passage? Ginny had promised to take the girls to M&M World, that ridiculous place in Times Square they had passed too often in a taxi, Maggie scooting to press her face to the glass to watch the giant smiling M&M scale the Empire State Building on the electronic billboard and wave from the spire, its color dissolving yellow, then blue, then red, then yellow again. She had promised. Promised, Olivia said, her face twisted into the expression she reserved for moments of betrayal. Please, Olivia whined. You said spring. Miss Walbert introduces the characters immediately in that first passage. Ginny, the mother. Maggie and Olivia, the children. Now, I don't have any children of my own, which is a very good thing for humanity as a whole. But I do know a little bit, and I'm a human, so I understand that it must be a huge pain, but also very gratifying to bring children to a place like M&M World or a ball game, because you want to give them new experiences, but it's also very stressful because they like to run away and hide. So we learn immediately that there's some kind of tension, right? That comes out in the tone. We get the character and then the tone. Ginny, the mother, has promised something to the children, and so now she's going to give it to them. The kids are going to be happy, but of course, there's always some kind of difficulty in there. Do we establish diction right away? Yes, the sentences are very professional and clear and descriptive. The third-person narrator takes some kind of distance from the characters, and we know there are going to be some beautiful sentences in the story, but there are also going to be some powerful thoughts in the story because the narrator already has access to the characters. Does the story kick off the narrative? Yep, because going to M&M World is the whole point of the story, where the climax happens, and where all of the standard epiphanies take place. As my final example, I'm not going to stick with Best American Short Stories 2012. I'm going to talk about one of my favorite short stories, if not my favorite. If you read my essay about T.C. Boyle, you'll know that I have a very interesting relationship with the story The Love of My Life. Originally published in 2000 in The New Yorker, that story knocked me out. I was at a three-way rest stop near Buffalo, either on my way back to Ohio or coming from Ohio, I don't recall. But what I do recall is reading that story and having my heart wrenched, but also my faith in humanity restored in a very strange way, in a way that only a writer like T.C. Boyle can do. It gets you from the opening. They wore each other like a pair of socks. He was at her house, she was at his. Everywhere they went, to the mall, to the game, to movies and shops and the classes that structured their days like a new kind of chronology, their fingers were entwined, their shoulders touching, their hips joined in the slow, triumphant sachet of love. My goodness, isn't that beautiful? Oh, the characters are established, right? They, these two people. He doesn't even differentiate between them because they're supposed to be so together, which is also a reflection of the sadness of the end of the story. It establishes the tone. Oh, this is a beautiful, idealistic tone. A story that confronts how the world is different from what we want it to be. The idealism that we all have as young people. The diction. Oh, just beautiful sentences to reflect the beauty of the love and emotion in the story, but also the sadness and deep regret that you have at the end of the story. And does it kick off the narrative? Oh, it's getting there. It's the love of the two characters that leads them to make the, I guess you could call it a mistake, that leads them to make other mistakes, including that big mistake at the end of the story. In case you hadn't noticed, I'm trying not to release any spoilers, because if you haven't read the story, you should run out immediately and read it. It's in two of his collections. It's on the New Yorker website. Go check it out. I hadn't expected to do this, but I'm thinking about it, and it seems appropriate. Let's see if I follow my own rules. I had a story called Something Like a Sin published at Go Read Your Lunch, a very cool alternating current press endeavor. It's a cool story I wrote while I was at Ohio State. I like it a lot. You may or may not. It's America. That's cool. If you don't like it, don't leave a comment. Come on, we can't be jerks here. Let's see if I follow my own rules in terms of the opening passage of my story. Like most bum decisions, I agreed to go to Transformation Baptist while I was 4 beers lit. I was flush from some unexpected overtime working construction on a new development outside of Cato, so I was drinking Guinness, not my normal domestic swill. Luke was a sheetrock guy, so the invitation was one of those slick inevitabilities. It's all a script, you see. You're standing on tamped, cat-tracked earth, leaning against a temporary chain-link fence at the end of the day. You ask about kids if you have them, sporting events, plans for the weekends and such. So let's see, do I establish character? Well, it's a first-person story. The character, as it ties into diction, he's not a dumb guy. He's not probably a college graduate. Never really thought about it, but I don't think he is. So he's not the best educated guy, but he's also not going to break out the beautiful, beautiful kinds of phrases that you can have in Love of My Life or in a story like Eminem World. We also learn about Luke. He's a sheetrock guy. He's also a construction guy. We don't want to stereotype people, but, you know, in the opening of a story, we know that these are two guys who work construction, so we kind of use our judgment and make slight assumptions about who they are and what they're about. Do I establish the tone? Oh yeah, I guess. Like most bum decisions, it was a bad idea. We want to know why, what happened. What happened to make it a bum decision? Why was it a bum decision? Does the opening passage kick off the narrative? I'm going to say yes, because the character going to the church kicks off the rest of the story and leads naturally to the ending. As we all know, the inciting incident should lead to a peak in rising action that leads to another peak, that leads to another peak, that leads to the climax, and then finally the denouement. And yeah, going to Transbap, as I call it later, is what sets the character on his eventual path to epiphany. Don't get me wrong, I'm definitely not saying that my stuff is as good as any of the other examples I've used, but shouldn't you sit back and look at your own story and kind of wonder if you're doing the same kinds of things? Making sure that you're hitting those 4 milestones in your opening passage. I hope that's been a little bit helpful to you. If you want to comment, go ahead. You can do so in the comments on this video. You can hit me up at Twitter, at GreatWriterSTE, Great Writers. You can also hit up the Great Writers Steel Facebook page. All of that's in the description. So, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.